sounds like Liquid's trying to impersonate me on the Blunt Force Gamers podcast. Now I know how Master Miller felt, if he was alive.
Welcome back. It is I, your host. You know me by now, probably, maybe, sort of. Game Goblin, sitting with the crew.
Darth Blasphemous, hail to the dark side.
The moniker, no longer suffering blessings of Nurgle.
And Kazarkan, the Lord Dragon.
And we're back for another gaming podcast. This week we've actually got us a couple suggestions.
Ooh, fan suggestions? We're making progress?
Not just fan, well, we're noticed also. Yeah, progress.
Senpai noticed us.
Winning!
I was checking on the internet too, and speaking of fans, their website, I have no clue on how we got there. We have one subscriber. And one is better than zero, but whoever that dude is, they're fucking cool.
Let's give him a quick shout-out to our mystery subscriber on that one platform.
Yeah, that one platform. I was just, like, searching just randomly, just bullshit, doing admin stuff. Pod Drop or Pod Box, some off-the-wall site I've never even heard of, and I'm like, what the hell? How are we here? And, yeah, mystery. So, shout-out to that one subscriber, because you're awesome.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah!
Fuck yeah! So our suggestions come from Wild Iron. It's a goofy-ass name. He plays Raid Shadow Grinding, the eternal grind game on mobile phones. He came up with a really good one, which was how different genres kind of appeal to different groups psychologically. So we've got that one, and we've also got a guy on, because I do a lot of platforms here, of course. I was doing
Star Wars?
Star Wars! See, I do a lot of platforms.
Star Wars.
Yeah, he's up. So shout out to Sansun for suggesting miniatures in gaming. So these two kind of bridge together in their own right, so we're going to do a double episode of our suggestions.
Right on.
Someone said miniatures. I'm going to go into conniptions here.
So yeah, let's roll that intro so we can get into it.
Right on. Pressing the button.
Feeling tired at the gaming table? Want to hear foul-mouthed jackasses poke fun at gaming companies when they screw up? Want an honest, street-level opinion from a team of gamers that call it like it is? Then Blunt Force Gamers may be the podcast for you.
Listener discretion advised.
So, we're talking how different genres appeal to different groups. I think we should really start with the origin of all this, of why we do games in general. It's a form of escapism, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Power fantasy.
Man, that's another version.
Exploring new things a lot of the times. In my case, it tends to be more lore-based, but...
It's getting to live a, you know, epic adventurous fantasy life vicariously.
Exactly. I mean, I really enjoy the world building, so I like the behind-the-scenes stuff.
Sure.
But when it comes to character creation, I love just helping people to live their best pretend life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of those things of someone sort of like, well, I want to be a monk and do all this really cool shit, but have this awesome mohawk. I'm like, all right, you don't got to be bald, bro. You know, it's all good.
Psst! Occidental!
Can't be an elf.
I'm an elf. For me, I like the world building mostly, especially with the later iterations in the horror fantasy genre. When you get survival horror, you build your own base and it's yours.
Yeah.
It's like your castle of doom. And I was playing a game a while back, and I wish they had continued it, not abandoned it. But you can build like a shitload of turrets, and when the alien invasion came, there I am sitting on my throne of power, sipping a Nest tea, and I'm like, come on, alien scum. I have 228 Gatling guns pointed at your mothership. What you gonna do?
Modaka.
Well, that's definitely an important thing. Like, you can tell when you go to a game shop and you're looking for a group, or you're looking at people who are like, yeah, I'm interested in playing, or they're looking at the books or the minis. Who gravitates to what? Like, you definitely have people who are more of the high fantasy style, right?
I'm one of those.
I think most of us are.
Yeah, pretty much.
Crom!
But, you know, we're usually heavy lore-based, world-based, so that's usually where you can strike a conversation up, is what's the world like? You know, those interesting, finite details are a big part of why the high fantasy realms attract a lot of us, and that's where a lot of people start. D&D is set in high fantasy realms. Mm-hmm. Sometime. Yeah.
You know, because we are treading psychology in this episode...
Cognitive dissonance.
Thank you, yeah.
I had to get that out of the way.
Yeah, anyone who brings up cognitive dissonance, you lose this episode.
The game, I have lost.
It's Moniker's Law.
Moniker's
Law. We have Murphy's Law, now we've got Moniker's Law.
I'm sorry, I just firmly believe that anyone who ever brings up cognitive dissonance in any sort of anything ever, who doesn't hold a psychology degree, you took one summer quarter of a psychology 101.
Or they just read an article on fucking
Sigmund Freud or some shit. Yeah. That being said, the moniker did take one summer course of psychology 101.
At least he admits it.
Yeah, you know, I'm self-aware. Or at least I try and be.
You know, moniker, tell us about the worlds that really attract you, because you are our 40K expert.
On yeah.
So what attracted you, and what do you say is the group you hail from?
I guess with me in gaming, it really goes back to high school. You guys remember Brony, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so him and I would hang out a lot in high school. And, like, we were kind of, you know, the band geeks, your stereotypical nerds, you know. We sat outside by, you know, the back of one of the English buildings or whatever. That's where the MTG crowd was. But then with 40K, how I got into that was actually Brony all those years ago. He was actually into it, and I thought it looked cool. I thought it just looked like a more hardcore Star Wars. And
well, everyone wants to pretend to be the best.
Yeah, exactly. But, so I guess what initially got me in was, you know, the Space Marines. Of course, like with Star Wars, it was borrowed from a lot of traditional storytelling and mythology and stuff, but it's really its own setting. What I liked about Warhammer, and especially the Space Marines, was how much they still kind of blatantly had, I guess, the different cultures that inspired them. You know, like you have the Ultramarines, which are like, you know, Space Romans, you know, Robute Gilliman is Space Caesar, shit like that. You know, that's what attracted me to it. And then the more I started reading up on it and seeing all the different races and stuff, you know, you got the Necrons, which are like Egyptian Terminators.
Orcs!
Yeah, yeah, and what was funny is before I really got into 40K, as everyone knows, orcs, I love orcs in any sort of medium. But then I was also really big into the Mad Max films. So when I saw the 40K orcs, that they were pretty much just Mad Max orcs in space, dude, I was sold. So I think if, I don't know, maybe in my mindset, I kind of wish to be, you know, some post-apocalyptic warlord, just wearing spiked-out shoulder pads and shit, getting to scream at everyone, so maybe that's my mindset, deep down.
Unlikely. And Kaz, I mean, you are our second eldest DM here, and you've played a lot of different versions, like D&D Modern, 10 feet.
Yes, yes. That wasn't exactly a very well-thought-out rule on their part.
No, but you come in from a totally... Well, it's tangential field of groups, because, you know, we all grew up differently, separate. We weren't really hanging out in high school because you were too old. I was in another state.
I was a dropout. Hanging out in high school? Fuck you, I already had a job.
But yeah, you know, with that, tell us a bit about the gaming that got you into it and what group you say you hail from.
So, I guess this is a bit of a weird one for me because I got into gaming because of my father. One of my favorite pastimes as a kid was just to sit there while my dad was playing video games, watch over his shoulder. I was a weird kid, but it led to me kind of getting a deeper understanding of gaming from very early on. Like, my mother will swear up and down that cribbage taught me math skills, and the Pokemon trading card game taught me how to read better. Like, I have learned most everything from gaming in some way, shape, or form. So I am very much a product of gaming.
So you're a generational gamer.
You're a legacy gamer.
Yeah. But, like, we're not typically talking, like, the old school platforms. Like, my dad started, like, he was playing computer games. So this sets the era that we're talking here. Yeah. Like, Goblin's got stories about the NES and, you know, all the properly classic consoles. My first experiences were a PC, an Xbox, and a handheld Game Boy. And I remember very pointedly that my Game Boy, not even a Game Boy Color, but my dad was like, that thing that you hold in your hand has more computing power than the computer that sent a man to the moon. And it's true. It really is true.
So from there, you getting into gaming, what genre was it that you initially like latched on to and were like, yeah, this is my shit? Because we've got an idea of your background, let's see where it led you.
It led me a little bit into high fantasy, but, like, I'll also splash into science fiction or, you know, anything that's not, like, set to realism.
General fantasy.
Yeah, general fantasy. So that means, like, my big story mark is StarCraft. That is a 20-year story, and it is goddamn amazing. There's many, many high fantasy. It's generally more where I go. I tend to play a lot more first-person shooters and puzzle games these days, and RTS.
Well, it's because the big game developers have fell on their face, and now we're left to the stuff. It's like, all right, this is kind of just fun for now. I see you when we play games together, is when it comes to the gaming, you get really into all the details and a lot of just the mechanics of how the worlds work. And I find it very interesting that you come from a background where it's like classic gaming to new gaming, big leap. You missed the middle ground. It's all good. We mostly did. But that's... So when you say your game style, for video games-wise, is just shooters and puzzles lately. But what about your tabletop?
Like, if I'm playing tabletop, I very much prefer high fantasy. And if I can, like Goblin and like yourself, I want to make that world feel alive. Feel like everything has a meaning, a purpose, even if that purpose is there is no purpose. But like Goblin and I have talked in a previous episode about making magic feel part of your world. And that's a big thing of it, is how do you make the world come to life?
All right. So we definitely have a really good grasp on at least two different aspects of where you got people who were outsiders who came in, legacies who were brought up through it. But before we get to Elder Gamer, I'd like to chime in.
Before I get into one of my long-winded stories, back in my day when my knee was swelling up, you knew a high score was coming.
Hey, you damned kids!
Get off my lawn!
You have no idea how many cars I washed to get all the freaking coins to play Pac-Man. But anyways...
Frogger, motherfucker.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Frogger makes sense.
Frogger.
So my background... top kick.
Top kick.
But for me, it was my uncles. Like, I kind of come from that legacy bit. But they walked me through from original Nintendo, Atari, and walked me through every generation of game system because they either had it or they knew someone who did and we would go and play it. And I just worked my way up that way through the whole lineage. And then comic books were a big one. So I love the, you know, power story of someone who has this great gift or ability and they have to use it for right or for ill, depending on what they want to do. And that's the stuff where I love character creation. I'm all about the characters of it and how they make sense. Backgrounds, you know. Do they use their power to its full extent? Do they restrain themselves? That's where I really get into it. So I've played from my first true interaction with gaming, which was our World of Darkness campaign, definitely in the horror genre. I liked it, but you guys can tell my character was a little not completely fitting in the world.
Yes, but, and no. He was adapting very slowly to his changes.
Yeah, and that's definitely part of it where I'm a character's influence, because I also try writing. I'm very bad at English. It's my only language, but hey. So that's where a lot of my stuff comes from. As soon as I got into Pathfinder, when we chose to do that, I started learning all the character building stuff and all the cool things. You can be like, all right, this guy has like all these cool stats and do all this damage, but let me play the character. Let me be a thespian again, you know. Play something I'm not. And that's what gets me into the escapism of that. And I come from definitely a semi-legacy background of it, but I was definitely the outsider once my uncles left. So I'm kind of bridging the gap between that.
All right, so right now we have the outsider, the legacy, and the hybrid, with the ancient to follow.
Yes, so let's see what Elder Gamer has to say here.
As I dust myself off from my tomb of horrors... And come forth onto the microphone, I shall tell you a tale. A tale of one angry goblin.
The whole time you were saying that, I just had, you know, the Dragonborn theme building up in the background in my head.
I was kind of hoping you would follow that by going, not by the hair on my chinny chin chin.
Oh my god. I still have that cassette.
I just watched a video the other day. It's awesome. But anyway, going along about how different genres appeal to different psychological mindsets and everything, as per the suggestion by Wild Iron, I've sampled a little bit of everything over the years. I started out as a video gamer. My first system was an Atari 2600. Yes, and when I got angry, you could just wail one of those cartridges across a room. No problem. And the controllers back then were... Fuck all. It was a brick with a stick.
Brick stick?
Like, one time I got pissed and I Irish bullwhipped my controller off the table and broke the table.
Nice.
Yeah, that's how sturdy those controllers were. So, back then, you know, gaming was really simple. You either had side-scrollers, you really didn't have that 2.5D view, there was no such thing as 3D at all in any shape, way, or form. And when I moved on from that, I moved into PC gaming, which, of course, PC Master Race was vastly superior.
Oh my god, I just had a vision of you with hair.
Yeah, yes, I actually did have hair back then.
Wow.
And the hair down below wasn't gray yet either. It's like every time I pluck a pube, I gain 5 years back on my NADSAC.
You are old.
I'm old. I admit it. Anyway, when I got on the PC, I found that there was a lot more different things you could do. Like, the games were much more robust. You had the point-and-clickers like Myst. You had Wolfenstein, the original.
All those old Sierra games.
All the old Sierra games.
LucasArts.
The original Doom games. You had... You kept... One of the things that was really awesome was you had the capacity to actually break into the game's coding. And if it wasn't written in some sort of fucked up weird code you needed to take a college class for...
As long as it wasn't in Cyrillic?
Yeah, as long as it wasn't like in Cyrillic plus ASCII code, C++ all at the same time, you could get inside of it and modify shit. And this is when I first learned, and before it became a hot issue, that gaming can be used as a form of therapy. Because all the guys back at school that I hated the most, I could change all the monsters' names in the dungeons to their names. And just walk through with a +9,000 holy mace and just waylay all these motherfuckers. Which was, in retrospect, a lot more safer than going through with a +9,000 whomping stick in school and waylay motherfuckers.
Right?
So I learned that from PC gaming. It's right.
I've done that too. Not necessarily with names, but like on particularly bad days, boot up Serious Sam. Go fucking ham.
Yeah, it was like when Mortal Kombat came out, the first system I legitimately purchased with my own blood, sweat, tears, hard work. I hoarded out my government subsidies for a summer to people who wanted free shit at a reasonable discount and managed to procure $180 over the course of the summer. Bought myself a... SNES.
Mm-hmm. The SNES,
and Mortal Kombat, if I squinted ever so slightly, Liu Kang looked like my brother-in-law. So there was nothing like just ripping his heart out over and over and over and over, because to say I hate this dude is really light. And it was during that course of time, during that summer, when I was going between PC gaming and console gaming, that I learned from my own experiences that gaming can be used as a form of just get your aggression out. It's basically a butt bag.
Yeah.
You know, in the backyard, you just go out and punch a duffel bag filled with clothes. But in this case, I'm in my living room with a controller working out those frustrations instead. And later on, it became kind of a hot topic. It actually started cropping up the news, you know, oh, gamers are, like, excessively violent. And then studies come out and say, no, actually, they work this shit out at home. And I'm like, I knew this before you did the report. And different genres appeal to different groups, much like they did to me. And for me, it was a form of therapy in its own way and saving everybody else's life. On the other hand, you have real-time strategy guys and guys who like shooters. These guys are looking for the quick fix. Yeah. They want to get in there. They want some action-packed fun. They're living that 1980s action movie feeling. You know, they get in there and just, like, start spraying bullets everywhere. They're like, I am the new Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Screw you. I've got Cortana. So you're looking at those guys with the shooters. They want the quick fix. Then you got, like, the history buffs. You got the guys who are mentalists who want to learn more. And they're playing games like Civ Rev.
Or Age of Empires or Crusader Kings.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
That's the best menus games I've ever played.
You've also got the puzzle guys who are trying to learn. You know, they're also mentalists in their own ways. They're trying to flex their mental muscles.
Yeah.
By playing puzzle games. You've got the people who want a real challenge and play like roguelike games or side scrollers that are insanely hard.
Yeah.
And these guys, you know, they a lot of cred to them because their reflexes are just screaming crazy.
Yeah, like that's the other big benefit that gaming has been shown time and time and time and time again is gamers have better, faster decision-making skills when compared against people who don't play video games faced with those same topics.
Well, it's just like the whole thing about you can put D&D on your resume and be like, yeah, I meet up with a group regularly to go through hypothetical problem solving. And it's a legit thing where literally that's what we do when we game, when we get together.
Yeah.
And for me, it really helped me, the gaming in general, because you guys remember when you first met me, I was awkward as fuck. And gaming has helped me to socialize. Well, it's helped me to understand how different appearances, either through my character or through whatever I'm doing in-game, has helped me open up my social acumen and throw a couple extra ranks in there, you know?
Well, it's also like how being a GM, you know, if you were actually be able to get away with writing D&D on a resume, which I'm not sure if you can do that nowadays. When I started working, no, you couldn't.
You still can't unless you're doing something that's specific to the gaming industry.
Well, it's all in how you word it. Because yes, saying I meet up with a group of people to run hypothetical problem solving, that's total legit.
Oh, that's right. Flowery words. You know, we run.
Yeah, you have to business it up.
Exactly.
You business it up, and then you just quietly not mention the fact that a lot of that problem solving involves a 1d8 weapon.
True. Well, yeah, going back on how gaming, you know, helps people out, you know, with the hand-eye coordination, memory skills. It's great for the elderly. They did tests with the original Game Boy. They tested Game Boys with old people playing Tetris, and they noticed that people were normally who were living very sedentary lives playing really slow-ass games like checkers. We're getting their thought processes were moving faster.
Yeah, and you know, I'm sure you guys remember hearing several years ago about that lady who was like in her like her 70s or 80s, and she would like stream Skyrim.
Oh,
yeah.
Skyrim Grandma!
Skyrim Grandma is great. Grandma was great.
Yeah.
She just went down to, and I hate Bethesda, but at the same time, they do shit like this. It makes me like still have some hope. They brought her in for the new Elder Scrolls game, and they scanned her in.
Oh, really?
Nice. Yeah, they scanned her in as
her face is going to be immortalized into the next game.
Yeah.
I do like it when gaming companies do that.
Remember when gaming companies used to do that? Or Magic the Gathering, if you were like the champion of the year, they made a card and they're just like, all right, we're going to put your likeness in the card.
Yeah. No.
Rewards. They work.
Let's see. Gearbox does this. There are 5 or 6 different references that you can find just in Borderlands 2 and will be 3 that are in relation to people who were big enough fans wrote them up and be like, look, I don't think, like, I really want to play this before I kick the bucket. I'm not expecting to live up until or much past the point that you're going to release the game.
Well, it's taking them so fucking long to get around to making the next game.
Yes, that too.
And they're playing the George card on that one.
What's the George card?
The Martine?
No, George Lucas.
Oh.
When it came to doing the prequel trilogies, he was like, oh, the technology doesn't exist yet. So he kept pushing it off, pushing it off, pushing it off. And then finally, when the technology existed, it all looked like plastic and rubber. So, yeah, but that's just like, oh, well, technology is not advanced enough to make the game that we want.
That's nice.
That's great.
Then make it.
But most of the people who started on Skyrim now are starting to graduate from high school or already have jobs and families or are in the military. I realize you guys have other projects and shit, but come on. This is your job. Do it. Do it now.
Kind of like the George R.R. Martin, how long did it take him to move from one book to the next? And we're still waiting on the last?
Yeah, now he's flip-flopping on that. But gaming genres, they definitely do appeal to different psychologies. As we have here, we got 4 different players from 4 different backgrounds. We all have a different psychological profile. And different games appeal to each one of us in a different manner. Like, I burnt out on shooters back when GoldenEye was king. This was the N64 era. GoldenEye was king. Doom had just come out with a new game. Turok had just come out. Like, this was the summer of shooters. You could not turn around without seeing a new shooter hit the fucking deal.
What about Half-Life? Or was that a little later?
This was around Half-Life. Half-Life is a story game.
Oh, well, yeah, but
Half-Life is a story game, and no one can tell me otherwise.
No, I know it's a story game primarily. I mean, Half-Life definitely has one of the greatest narratives in gaming, but, I mean, gameplay-wise, it's still a first-person shooter.
All right, so back on our topic here. I love the tangent, though. Not trying to stop it, but...
No, that's fair.
So we know where we're coming from and what we like. And we've given them some examples of the background we had. Now let's just take some of the different game genres and run with it. Horror games, number one. A lot of people love them. They're one of the bigger things. Vampire the Masquerade is arguably the best horror role-playing system.
There are a lot of them out there.
Actually, I would go... I hate the game, but I have to give props to Call of Cthulhu.
Okay, so let's take it from there. What kind of people do we meet in game shops or online normally gravitate towards those, and why do we think or know that they like them?
Creepy-ass motherfuckers who binge-watch Friday the 13th and Hostel movies.
Yeah.
That's the usual. People are obsessed with horror movies all summer long when they come out, because apparently horror movies don't do well when they come out during Halloween.
You know what? I honestly think that's because people just watch the older ones during Halloween season.
Yeah, it's traditional. Like, I have to watch Nightmare Before Christmas both Halloween and on Christmas.
I just have to watch the Daily News.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't handle that much scary, bro.
If I want to be scared and see and just, like, have a sleepless night, I'll just turn on the 6 o'clock news.
Yeah.
They've got plenty of horror stories for me.
I think, for me, like, my big tradition... It's not Christmas until I see Hans Gruber fall out of Nakatomi Plaza.
That is a Christmas movie. I don't care what anyone else says. It is the best Christmas movie.
Damn Skippy. Anyway, but back to gaming.
What did Skippy do?
Fuck Skippy, dude.
What? Why did you damn him?
Dude, he's a jerk. Have you talked to him recently?
Not really.
Yeah. Fuck
you know, he tried putting out those snack bars, and they were terrible. His peanut butter tastes like chemicals.
Exactly.
Like, everything's chemicals.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, Skippy was Hawaiian, I think. You know, he was all like, aloha snack bar.
Real quick, we all need to say, fuck you, Skippy, on three. One, two, three.
Fuck you, Skippy!
There we go.
So yeah, definitely with horror, we definitely find people who like that thrill, and I think they definitely are going after that adrenaline rush of the scare.
Yeah.
Same thing in gaming, you know, when you're playing a game like Dead Space,
you're
constantly on the edge of your seat, and I remember I knew that the fucking dog was going to be coming through the window when I was playing the first Resident Evil, and it still got me, you know, because you're sitting there, your heart is like in your throat, you're like, any minute, something bad could happen. Dead Space is just, like, the same way. You're sitting there, and you're like, the fuck.
Dude, that is why still in video games. I don't care if they're corpses, I still stab or shoot them all the time.
Did you guys ever play Alien Isolation?
No.
I never did.
That was a creepy one, because I think it does, in that game, the things that a lot of big horror movies shouldn't do, is there is no cutscene intro to the Xenomorph. You're just going through the hallways on, you know, whatever sort of mining ship or alien-esque ship. You know, with the old CRT monitors just kind of flickering. You're just going, then, boom, Xenomorph right from the ceiling in front of you. No preamble. No preamble at all. Just walking down, Xenomorph, hide.
Yeah, that's our whole thing. There was one I was playing. It was Aliens versus Space Marines, I believe. This was...
Wait, was that the... not console, the...
Colonial Marine?
No, this was back on the Jaguar.
Oh, the Jag days. Yeah, they didn't have a console... The big box.
Yeah, a guy I know, he had a like a quasi VR setup, and it had the chest thing you wore with speakers in it. And holy fuck, dude! You know, like for like being ready to piss myself at any moment, that did it. Because I didn't realize that because you know we were watching it on the monitor while other people were playing in VR. And watching on the monitor, you didn't get the full experience. But when you're wearing the chest pack, there's a low resonant hum that goes through it with a slow beat. And so, you know, after a while, your own heartbeat starts to go in time with it. So it's all beating at the same time. You know, it's just this low resonant boom, 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 boom. And it just it gets you in the back of the psychology, you know, in the back of the head. Psychologically, you're not, like, thinking about it because you're surrounded by xenomorphs. But when finally does come and the beeping stops and you're like, did my heart stop?
Yeah.
No, it didn't. It's okay. So the horror games, you know, they appeal to the psychology, you know, that people who want to be on edge, they get that real quick serotonin rush when something does happen, and then the dopamine hit afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, that feeling of relief afterwards, you know, it's
adrenaline junkies.
Okay. Basically, yeah, it's a bit of an adrenaline.
Full adrenaline junkies.
And then going from there with horror, it always seems to run into the sci-fi realm because that's some of the best horror is space stuff because there is so much unknown. It's not like, well, it's at the edge of the world or at the bottom of the sea. No, this is like, no, this is just what happens in this world.
Excuse me. BioShock. Continue.
Oh, God, yeah.
In space.
The first one was good, second one was alright, third one was garbage.
Actually, there's a mobile VR game that, I know I don't do much in the way of mobile, and I trash on it often as it deservedly requires, but there is a mobile horror game that's great, and they were showing footage of somebody playing it, so they take their phone, they put it in VR mode, and it scans the location that you're in. So before you play, you have to walk through the house with your phone up, and it basically scans the building that you're in. So they went to an abandoned store. It was two stories tall, an abandoned store with the bathroom, the front area for sales and all that. So for security reasons, because they don't want to scan their own home, because I can see why, they scan this abandoned location, then they had somebody put the VR headset on, and they're walking through the store. And, like, the amount of times they panicked, it was a supernatural game, but, like, ghosts would just pop out of nowhere and shit.
Oh, that's cool.
And when you got the headset on, you would hear things down the hall, because it already has the game scanned, so it basically randomly designates by the RNG that this room has a haunted apparition in it. And so down the hall, you could barely hear a haunted wail, and as you walk down the hall, you could hear it get louder and louder.
Oh, that's really cool.
So that was pretty trippy. Yeah.
On the topic of sci-fi, though, the people who usually are into that super high technology-based sci-fi, the, like, ships that go faster than light, I always find it to be the people who are super, like, tech-savvy. You know, think about how much Star Wars and Star Trek has influenced real life in the stuff we try to achieve.
Yeah, that's true.
Sliding doors.
The tablet. The home computer.
Touch screens.
The people I know who are into sci-fi, I mean, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of tech-savvy ones, but most of what I see is they're more just kind of like, you know, they have that real deep sense of just wanting to, you know, travel, and they just like the idea of the unknown is what I
exactly
is what I
find. Yeah, you know,
they're the modern day adventurer.
We all have that urge to explore. So, and with today's modern society, it's kind of hard to keep going west. We already know it's over there. So when you got space, you don't know what's beyond the next.
Yeah. You don't know what's beyond our atmosphere, really.
We don't even know what's in our oceans fully.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is why games like Subnautica work.
Oh, yeah. Fuck Reaper Leviathans.
Hey, what about Echo?
Which one?
Echo.
Oh, man.
You play the dolphin? Get into those end levels where the aliens pop in? That was sweet.
My favorite horror is Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yeah, we'll get to them. But
jump scares, cheap thrills.
But like the sci-fi, you have how many different Star Wars games out there people love? There's Star Trek mobile games people are fucking all into, and oh my god, I tried. I was in for about an hour and then deleted the app because I was like, holy crap, I can't handle this, and it kills my battery.
I liked Star Trek Online for a while, but it did not hold up to the full potential of being a Star Trek title. The only exploration you did really didn't feel like exploration. It got old and grindy quick.
Yeah, and that's the problem, is like, there's only so much that our creativity can actually put forth to the world.
And then we go to the tabletop realm where we can go bug nuts with our imagination. I have over there almost the complete Star Wars RPG game.
One of several.
Yeah, but one of the primaries, the one that's still being published. And in there, a lot of people I see who love playing that want to play heroes like they do in high fantasy. They're tired of running into, you know, like, dragons and liches and stuff. They want more like, we need to undo this fucking code shit to get the droids to stop assassinating this, you know, everyone on this planet. I've seen games like that go on, and it's rather interesting where there are a lot of more problem solvers in the realm of that.
It's a different band of cerebellum.
Yeah.
And also, I resent the fact that you are making quotes against dragons.
I love dragons, sir. You know this.
I know this. I'm going to state it for the record anyway.
I think what's cool about, you know, especially, like, what I like more in sci-fi, you know, fantasy, going back, it's usually like the issues, you know, while there are, you know, of course the fantasy elements, you know, dragons and evil sorcerers and all that stuff, which is great, but I find a lot more in sci-fi because of the high presence of technology, the issues that are faced are a lot more, I guess you could say, modern, you know, like a kind of more Blade Runner stuff, kind of more that, it's more gray area with sci-fi, I think, personally, you know? Whereas when you see fantasy, it's much more, there's the evil sorcerer or, you know, the dragon's horde. That's the antagonist, you know, where it's...
Really? Because I thought in role-playing with fantasy, the antagonist was the player characters.
No, it's the other player characters besides yourself.
Ah.
Yeah.
I mean, that too. We'll not get into that, because we'll get... I'm sure we'll touch on it later. Now, here's another curveball. Sci-fantasy.
That's a fun one. We've got, what is it, Starfinder?
Yeah, Starfinder is definitely getting there.
Those are for the people who like to have a salad bar.
Now, what's sci-fantasy?
Sci-fantasy is science fiction fantasy having a baby.
Oh,
so goblins in space, bro. Act legit goblins, not, alien race that are something like goblins.
No, they're straight up goblins.
Back in my day, we called it Spelljammer.
There you go.
Does steampunk fall in that category? Or?
No. Steampunk is kind of its own category.
It is evolved enough to be its own.
It's enough. It's on the low-tech end of it.
Okay. Yeah, steampunk is just... Sorry. It's like,
it is the low-tech end of it.
It's a stepping stone between fantasy and tech, because it gives you a lot of that.
You had to say steampunk, and now I'm a doula, I'm a goddess, like, seizing up.
Or is it just that you got so many teeth and no toothbrush?
Yeah.
No, there's actually, like, he said steampunk, and I suddenly just, like... That long groan that I just let out was my medulla oblongata just like
crying.
I felt all the moisture just pulled out of it, and it turned into a raisin still attached to my cerebellum.
When I think of steampunk, I think of pretentious pricks and people who still like to cluck near fence.
That is definitely what it's become, but it started with a lot of people who look, at least from my understanding, look back into the past, so they were more of the history buffs and saw that steam age and wanted to expand upon that. Those are the people I at least knew back when I first heard about it.
Yeah.
Then you go to cons, or you hang out with people at certain shops. Yeah, they're the pretentious people.
They'll have that one Nerf gun with all, like, the brass and copper paint and the little cogs and shit on it.
Because it's cheap.
Yeah, and nothing against most steampunk people, you know. I know.
I went to Goodwill.
Steampunk is interesting if it's done right.
Yeah, no. It's like I think a good one for that is, did you guys ever play Bloodborne? That's a little steampunky, but that one is like steampunk meets, you know, cosmic horror and gothic horror. It's a really lovely little blend. It was made by the Dark Souls people. But, you know, you'll have one of the weapons, I think it's actually just straight up called Tinnitus, and it looks like an old school lightning rod, and you can just beat someone with a lightning rod.
So here's the great fall of the steampunk groups. I was at Goodwill recently. They had this very lovely clock. It wasn't so much a grandfather clock, it was like maybe a, you know, dad clock. It was table size, but it was big. And these two teenagers are talking about it. And I'm like, oh man, that thing's really cool. Only $30. I'm totally gonna buy that if I had the room. And they're like, oh well, we just want it for the parts. And I'm like, what? That this thing is operational and it actually runs off the chains and what the hell? No, steampunk people just want to take shit apart for the cogs, wheels, and all that. And I was like, just buy them online. Well,
you know what? You found you some looters.
Yeah, and it bugs me. Yeah, a properly made clock should not be stripped for parts unless you're putting together another much better clock.
Note to self, bring clock home, take it apart, throw everything away.
Also, can we
leave? I will murder your tiny ass.
Can we leave Nikola Tesla alone just for 5 minutes in steampunk, though?
Ooh, fun thing.
Like, please. Yeah. I mean, he's a cool guy. He discovered, what was it, alternating current?
AC.
Yeah, he discovered alternating current, but...
Okay, real quick, fun fact. Listening to a podcast with actual scientists talking about him, they're like, yeah, if he would have got his whole free energy thing going, we would not have any of the technology we have today, because that much power freely floating in the air would destroy any microprocessor we try to make. I'll take the guy who steals patents all day, bro.
Neither here nor there. Another interesting sci-fantasy, it's science fiction pseudo-horror first-person game called Deep Rock Galactic, and it's really fun. You play as a space dwarf working underneath a company called Deep Rock Galactic, who now owns the planet Hox's, I think it's 9, IX.
So you get to play as Peter Dinklage.
But the thing is, it is high-tech, yet there are some of the quips from the characters that you play. Watch where you're shooting, you pointy-eared leaf lover! There's enough there's plenty of shade to go around, alluding to other fantasy races. I'm like...
What? You know, this is not the first time you brought up somebody insulting another person in Dwarven. And should I find it again, I will bring out my Dwarven insult generator just for you.
I have pictures of that.
You tool-dropping, anvil-smashing thumb basher. Yes. Suit-bearded elf kisser.
Yeah, I got one. I think if we go to card gaming and any sort of card gaming or war gaming that involves miniatures, I think that appeals to people with OCD.
A little bit.
And I would know because I actually have OCD.
I think it's more to people who have the gambling rush, because I'm fighting that myself. I basically quit card gaming, but I did buy some cards this week. Just saying.
He's off the boat.
He fell off the wagon.
But it was a big thing when I first started getting into Magic is... I was like, man, I just bought this box and opened all stuff, and I want to go get more so I can try and get these cards. And my buddy's like, yeah, you need to not do that, because that's gambling. That's what you're doing. You're going out and buying a chance at something, and then you're ripping through it. And when the boxes back then were only $100. Now you're looking at $120, $300 for currently printed sets that are special edition, limited print run, what have you. But that's what it is. A lot of the people who love the card gaming, if they buy just boxes and packs, they're gambling. So it's people after that quick endorphin rush.
I am sorry, dude, but I have to correct you on that one. It is not loot boxes. It's surprise mechanics.
Oh, fuck that.
You and your wording.
No, that's not his.
No, that's...
That is not his. That's straight out of EA.
That's straight out of EA. While they're EA is defending loot boxes right now, and they called it surprise mechanics.
That is literally what they did.
Oh, my God. But yeah, that's...
Verbatim.
Definitely for people who fall into the card gaming, and there are other types, like...
There are subsets within card gaming.
Exactly.
So there is deck building games, which are pretty popular. A really good one right now is Ascension. I am a big fan
DC
of that.
DC deck builder.
Exactly. But they suffer on this premise that you and the other players share the central deck and a selection of cards, maybe, and you use resources from within your deck by playing your cards to buy more resources to put into your deck, rinse, spit, repeat, ad nauseum, until the end of the game, whatever that trigger is.
And one of the good things about that is, like, when we play these, is it's definitely a thing of interaction. It's like, someone across the table is like, dude, I fucking dibs on that card, I fucking need that.
Oh, dude.
And then you're like, well, you know what, I'm gonna dick you over, I have twice as much points, so I'm going to buy that and half of the rest of the board.
You guys.
Yeah,
that happens. It's definitely a thing. It's a resource management game, and it's really great.
Yes. And the other type is your competitive card games. These are things like Magic the Gathering, Android Netrunner, which I really want to keep coming back, Yu-Gi-Oh!, where part of the gameplay is facing off against another person.
Okay, gentlemen.
Whoa, we're getting heavy topics now.
No, no, we're not getting heavy topics. I just want to state two things real fast. Number one, stop pumping the table, Blasphemous, for fuck's sake. And number two, we got about 15 minutes left, so...
Let's switch over to minis?
Let's switch over to minis real quick, and we'll wrap up our podcast on minis. Because I'm not sure if we covered this in a mini episode previously, but there are a few topics I'd like to discuss.
All right.
Okay, starting out, I love minis at the role-playing table. And when you're playing any game, like, for example, Vampire the Masquerade, is not a mini-based game. It's all theater of the mind.
Theater.
And it's really easy.
Theatro.
It's really easy to do that. Theatre of the mind.
In Gabon.
Because we live in the modern world. So when you say, oh, the guy dies behind the car and he's about 20 feet away, you can easily visualize that because, well, every one of us sees a car at least 20 feet away almost on a daily basis. Or, you know, he's in the third story room. Well, all houses right now are built by pretty much the same cookie box standards. So you can be like, oh, third story up, he's about 30 feet, give or take a few feet, easy breezy.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to visualize a brick building, whereas in a far future game or a fantasy game, we don't live in that environment. So when somebody says, oh, he's third story up, you're like, well, okay, are they using some sort of weird architecture in this far future world? Are the windows tiny little portholes?
Yeah, like, what would you... So a good way to go about that would be, so up three windows from the ground, you see a figure who is doing blah, 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 possibly aiming at you with a weapon of some kind. Let's use that for argument.
He's smoking a spliff.
Yeah, we'll say he's doing that. And then, you know, you notice that these windows are blah-da-blah, and they are about blah-da-blah apart.
What I want to get into, though, is two things. First, I love hex maps more than square maps. Hex maps are much more reliable for gauging distance, although they really don't give you much in the way of figuring out that distance in most of the splat books and whatnot.
Yeah, that's the tricky part, but at the same time, it does feel a little bit more natural to be moving in six directions rather than eight.
True. Well, it's like when you cast a spell, and you know, your wizard casts a spell, it's a line of fire, and you're using a hex map, the line is straight. Predominantly a straight line. It's a little bit of wiggle room, but not very much. Whereas on a hex or a square map, it's like one forward, two to the side, one forward, two to the side, one forward. It's like zigzagging all over the place. It looks really obscenely bad.
Looks
However,
janky.
With the moniker sitting at the table, I think he would agree with this one, even though he hasn't really done much in the way of role-playing yet. So, first thoughts here, because you probably haven't done it yet.
Okay.
How would you feel about using templates like out of Warhammer Fantasy or Warhammer 40K, using those templates and the measuring sticks to gauge distance while playing games like Dungeons & Dragons?
Yeah, sure. I think that's a totally viable way of going about it.
Wouldn't it look a lot cooler to like place a template over your character's head, center it up, and be like, okay, all the guys underneath the green template are now hit by my ray of frost?
Yeah, I like that.
Well, there's a lot of people who make those third-party, or people just steal them straight from Warhammer. You go buy the Warhammer one, you're like, all right, this fits, you know, this size. They mark it out with the grid pattern, all that, and they're like, this is the thing.
You know what's funny is that in 8th edition, they actually took out a lot of those templates and stuff, and a lot of players were really unhappy about it. So, 8th edition, its whole thing was to get as many new players in, and it worked.
5e!
Yeah.
5e.
So, you know, of course there's things people like about it, even the old school 40k guys, but there's little things they don't like because, you know, it just simplified it a lot. But yeah, I think to see that at a role-playing table, that'd be really freaking sweet.
I think it would help out with players, you know, especially when, even though you're playing on a grid map, you know, you got your squares, it's a lot easier, I think, and more realistic if you go, anybody underneath this template is hit, rather than anybody in these squares is hit. You look at the squares and you're like, why is this guy not hit?
Yeah, or it's like, you know, you say everyone within like, I don't know, like 25 feet or something. Well,
big circle.
Yeah, big circle. It's like, Well, on that little square grid, I mean, those squares could be however many feet, you know what I mean? It's like, that could just be hitting one square, or that could be hitting, you know, the whole damn table. So yeah.
One thing, though, with minis, like, I love using them for battles. It's easier to track people's positions. Massive multi-battles is where it becomes really useful. My big issue is when you go from a 2D trying to represent 3D, like, oh, well, my character turns into a gust of wind, and I start to fly. I'm a wind elemental. Now it's like, fuck.
You know? Just pull out a bottle cap here or a dice box and set it on. Set my character on it.
I think the problem that he's trying to elaborate on, though, is not the fact that you can prop the person up on, like, a post. I mean, a lot of GMs have, like, little sticks and stuff, or...
They sell stands, legit, from WizKids, the guys who make a lot of the D&D minis now.
Yeah.
I think Reaper had some for a while. But I rarely see them. Where you can do that, and they can go, you know, a couple inches up and what have you, and they're stable. But now you've got this thing on the bottom that you've got to move around. If they're, like, over other characters, you've got to, like, adjust the minis there. But not even that. When you have, like, Warhammer, you guys have this. Yeah. Where you have buildings or other features that you have a big thing there for. Now try putting your mini on that.
You know, there's always, they call it wobbly mini syndrome, you know. So you have to work with that a little bit. But a lot of the terrain, it has room for your miniatures to stand on. And, like, say I want to move one of my boys to a second level. He's got a move characteristic of 5 inches. So you measure the distance from the ground up to the second floor. And if it's within 5 inches, or if you advance, you know, and get however many, up to 6 inches additionally to go up there, then that says, okay, they can climb up there. Because usually, you know, at least in 40K's case, most of the cities and shit are bombed out anyway. So it's not like, you know, they're just going to take the stairs or the elevator up there. They have to find a way to actually climb up there, so...
Yeah.
Well, I think part of what he's trying to elaborate on, though, is if a guy is flying, say he goes 30 feet up, that's 3 squares high. So if a person is casting a spell at the person who's flying, do they also have to measure out, like, with little cubes? Like, 1 cube forward, 2 cubes up, 1 cube forward, 2 cubes up? You know, do they have to, like... I think that's why measuring sticks and templates would be a vastly superior form in D&D that has not been completely adopted yet. I think it would be vastly superior, because then you just pull out a little measuring stick, say a 6-inch one, and say, my spell has a range of 30 feet, that's 6 inches, put it over your character's head or near their hands, and then aim with your little stick and say, can I hit the guy? Is he within range? And if the end of the stick touches both minis, boom, he's in range.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, like I've used that. What was it? Star Wars... It's a tabletop...
Armada.
No, not Armada, but the other one. X-Wing.
X-Wing, yeah.
Well, they both run off the same principle, and I love those games. No one wants to play with me, though.
It looks
Don't really tempt cool. me. I will tell my roommates, and they will play with you.
I just took my Armada stuff apart, and it's in, like, 4 different boxes. I have my Star Destroyer up there, because it's beautiful.
Carrying on. But it has these templates, and these templates are the core mechanic of the game. I want to turn my ship to the left. It's going to follow this template. Dink. And you drop it down the end of the things while all the bases have little notches for it.
Well, even like in RTSs, you know, sorry for the clap, you know, like Age of Empires or Age of Mythology and stuff like that. Like, you know, if you have, say, like your...
6 movement, we'll say, right?
It's just click and tell them where to go. But like, say you have some trebuchets, you have like a line of trebuchets or onagers, and you want to, you know, not like your opponent's city walls. They have, you know, the red area and the green area. If it's in the red, that means it's out of range. If it's in the green, you're within range and you can hit it. Same thing with, like, an Age of Mythology. Like, if you had, like, a god power, like, say you wanted to cast an eclipse, you know, so make it so all of your enemies' mythological units suffer greatly to both their attack and defense. Well, you're going to have a little...
A targeting circle.
Yeah, you're going to have a targeting circle. And, like, video games going far back have been using templates, so, you know...
Mythologies is not new.
That came out, 2005,
a precursor 2006. To almost every fucking game out there now, Dungeons & Dragons, started as a war game. So it doesn't seem that far-fetched to go back to the basics... And go back to what, you know, war games used back then, you know, with the little pushers that they had.
Yeah, trying to find those pushers is a pain. Remember, we made one extendable stick.
Little pushers,
and
like
you've
seen in, like, the old World War II movies.
Yeah.
We'll move the men over here.
Yeah. Well, just, like, use little pushers to move your minis around. You know, that helps out. I think using measuring sticks of various sizes for your spellcasters would be great.
Yeah.
Templates for blast radiuses, not just for spellcasters, but like you were just mentioning, trebuchets.
Yeah.
You know, there should be a green zone where, you know, you pull out a stick and says, my trebuchet has a range maximum of this, and then there's like a little line pointed on it and says minimum of this. So everything within that is the green zone.
Unless you get yourself a warwolf, in which case you're not going to need a little 6-inch thing. You're going to need a full yardstick.
So fun thing, people are trying to address this issue with those modern ones. We've all seen it. Our listeners have all seen it. They take TVs and implant them into their gaming table, right? So now they have their map. So from the controls, a lot of the programs people have that run a lot of the stuff, like to make the enemy units pop up in the screen, not to have minis on the deal.
Tabletop Simulator and Roll20 are really good for
exactly.
this.
Exactly. And they have people who do this on those TVs they embed. And it's like, all right, cool. So you're going and the mouse appears and click on the spot where the player is. They're like, you have a thing of 30 feet, and they just go and click on the tab, 30-foot radius or line or cone.
Yeah.
And it pops up on the map like that, and they can move it around, what have you. That stuff's cool, but to do it IRL with physical accoutrements, I think that would be really fun, too, because I'm definitely old school. I like having the minis. You guys remember playing with me.
Yeah.
Hmm? I would have the minis and then the map drawn out. And I still have to erase one of the maps. I owe you a new map board.
I think that going on that topic real quick as a quick sidebar is going old school is better, in my opinion, because you have that tangible physical item on the table. If Kazarkan shows up and he brought a mini that he's buffed the crap off of the edges, he's taken his file to it, he's made it all pretty, he's put the undercoat on there, he's painstakingly painted it for 10 hours to get that.
That thing is going to look goddamn beautiful.
It's going to look goddamn beautiful. And to see the GM reach over with one finger and just knock it over, say you hit 0 hit points, I think that adds a tangible aspect of just, ouch, because the GM is touching something you personally made for that game. And when the GM or any other player just picks it up, you know, it's physically a part of you. It's your creation at that point. And to see somebody else just reach over and touch it.
I've got a perfect story about that. And also going on that subject, because yesterday I played a game with Sparta and one of his friends. It was a 2-on-1. It was me and my evil sons with... God, I feel bad if I forget his name. He's a nice dude. But he was playing Slaaneshi Demons and Sparta going with his Blood Angels. And I have this... I got the custom boosted blaster. I've spent maybe 2 months on this thing making sure it looks rusty and realistic. Like, this thing has just been sitting out in all weather and they just didn't care about it until it was time to rev up the engine. And seeing the armies all there gathered on the table with all the terrain and stuff, that is just the most satisfying thing, because it's like all that hard work and you put in with painting and, you know, making sure that all the pieces fit and, you know...
Blood, sweat, tears, and pain.
Yeah, it all comes
Lots
together and feels great.
Lots of blood.
But then when Colin says knocking it over, you know, I get maybe one shot off with this thing that I worked for months on, and then it just gets blown to smithereens by Space Marines, and I'm not at RLGS, and so I'm just like, fuck that, right in the middle of the Games Workshop, and everyone just kind of looks at me, I'm like, oh yeah, because I have to take it off the table after I spent all this time on it.
Yeah, I believe with the physical aspect of doing it more old school than with technology,
yeah.
There's that physical aspect, there's that connection that players have to the stuff
yeah.
on the table. And if it's all digital and being moved around digital, you know, and something gets deleted, oh shit, well, I'll just grab a token off of a generator real quick and just reinsert that.
Yeah. Yeah, especially like if I got, you know, like a war boss and I put a lot of work into him, you know, and he's looks like he's about to be done in by a Space Marine captain. I'm like going, what can I spend some command points on to keep him alive? You know?
And like, another
I put work into this, damn it.
Because you know this from yeah. my campaign, and you've seen me spend days painting at my table.
Yeah.
Can I say, your campaign has taught me one thing.
Hmm.
The importance of Occam's Razor.
Yeah?
Yep.
Well, I stole that puzzle from online.
Yeah.
But anyways, another cool thing is when you have everyone in the group has their mini, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You put them all together, say they're sitting down at a table in a tavern. It gives you a sense, more realism. For me, it enthralls me into the games. Like, I set up all the painted minis for our group and took a picture of it, which I'm going to show you guys at the next game session. I was just like, these are your characters, and I put like a background piece behind them and set my camera up right, messed with lighting in the house.
Yeah.
And I took this epic photo of the minis and being like, this
the
is straight
up... The conquering heroes cresting
yeah.
the hilltop!
Oh, it was more like the idiot standing in a bar. But anyways, I want to do one when I finished all the campsite stuff
yeah.
of them sitting around in camp.
I like that.
But that's cool. The thing is, the physical, tangible bit that they are definitely can more enthrall you into the game. Even though I'm the one who painted all these minis, except for yours because I had to buy it and it was already painted. Miniatures, I'm very pro-miniature. Oh, and yeah. Even if you have to have tokens to represent your bad guys, because I did the thing of buying all the skeletons I needed for a dungeon, and I painted them and painstakingly clear-coated them and everything, and they went through the skeletons in about 5 minutes.
Yep.
Yeah, it does suck being GM when you put out a miniature and it's like, oh, I put all this work into it, it sucks.
Pat.
Pap, done. That's why you don't paint skeletons. You just put out little...
Pennies. By the little beads.
No, you hit them with... for skeletons, it's really easy. You hit them with a black undercoat, and then do a white dry brush over them, and you're done.
Yeah.
Skeletons are super easy.
Well, there were armor and stuff, but beside the point, I'm...
Imagine if you will. Okay, so you spend a week making a dungeon on a TV set that's embedded in the table. And your characters go through the dungeon, and it takes like a couple of hours. Okay, that they're gonna be like, "Oh, this looks cool and everything." But how much more impressed do you think that it would be if you set up a game table dungeon?
Yeah,
like you see online, you know, with these people, they're super dungeons. You spend a week setting up a dungeon, even not near half as cool as one of those. How much do you think your players will come in and be like, "Holy shit!"
Or take it seriously, where like the lights actually work in the dungeon.
There are kits galore and 3D printing schema that you can do. Mm-hmm. That are modular systems, so you can just build a whole bunch of tiles and slap them together, and all of a sudden you have a full 3D immersive dungeon. And, like, the players walk in, they see that on the table, and even if it's shrouded up and, like, covered up with little paper squares just to block their vision of rooms that they haven't been in, holy tits.
Yeah.
It just blows their goddamn mind. And yeah, it's a beautiful sight.
For me, the big problem with those is I find them to be limiting just because my drawings of dungeons vary greatly. But for me, I'm working on something.
It's going to be a hex pattern. Don't pay attention. It looks like a stick figure.
This yeah. is my first time drawing. Please be nice.
I'm working on something. I've been designing it. It's really labor intensive and going to be expensive. Little hexagonal like posts, right? They're going to be about 8 inches, and rig them all up so they've got gears on one side, like little gears on like three of the sides, and on the other three sides they've just got the
receivers.
Yeah, the receivers. So you can go on there, and I'll try and make this up with a program where you basically hit buttons and say I need a full computer, and so you're going to be like, all right, I want this one to raise up to its full height, which is like twice double a mini size. And you're like, but I want to make it taller, so the six of them around it are going to go up, or maybe I just don't want that, so it disengages. So now you've got this mobile
That's
field,
cool.
But it's going to be way too expensive, and it's a pipe dream, I know. But if I can get access to a 3D printer and all the electronics, this will be the most interactive physical table piece.
You're talking making a full 3D hex map with vertical pillars to actually make that a thing. That is gorgeous. I want to see this.
I can show you the designs next week, because they're at work.
Okay, gentlemen, it's time for final thoughts.
Okay, so we've got two final thoughts sections. We've got the gaming and psychology.
Gaming and psychology.
And we've got the minis discussion.
Yeah. Or I can marry the two together, because they're really interchangeable. They come close.
They come...
Because miniature gaming, you know, I mean, it does appeal to some people, and other people like theater of the mind.
You know, I think, at least what I've seen from all the painting, because I follow a lot of painters, I think... Painting miniatures and miniatures are a great way to blend kind of gamer mindset, because like you'll have some people who go with a real grim dark and they'll paint their miniatures real kind of gritty looking, real dirty, like they've actually been out crawling through mud and shit. Then you've got the people who are very polished, you know, they like their stuff to look very clean, even if it's a more kind of rough and tumble group like orcs or tyranids, you know.
But they're gonna look goddamn amazing!
Yeah, or you have the people who have been in this hobby longer than most of us have been alive, and their stuff looks like tiny miniature little sculptures, you know, or people who like get into like the off, you know, I think it's called like OSL, but it's like outsourced lighting or something like that. So they'll be holding up like a glowing sword, and then you can see the light painted on them like it's reflecting, you know. So it's just all about what appeals to them, you know, what kind of
what's their style?
Yeah, what appeals to them and what their style is. It's almost kind of like, I guess you could say, cartooning in a way, you know? Like, there's even some people who have, like, a really just garish, outlandish colors that you would never even think of. But when it comes together, it looks really freaking cool.
Yeah, I'm kind of partial to purple.
Purple's great. It's the sneakiest color.
For my thoughts, when it comes to the genres bit, you know, there's a flavor for everybody. Even if you have to combine flavors, there's systems that will cover everything. Systems that specify one thing. So your flavor's out there. If you really want to get into it, just keep searching for that flavor. On the miniatures thing, I'm pro mini. I love painting minis. I've had to take a break from it because of life.
And
I'm
looking
to get back into it. Money, not so much. That's been fixed. But nice. I strongly suggest people go out, find a mini, 3D print a mini. Don't buy a 3D printer just to make a mini.
Or go to Hero Forge.
Hero Forge. We're not sponsored, but we love them.
We love them. Sponsor us, please.
Oh, God, yes. Please sponsor us. Old man dying in corner.
No, that was just so much awesome from, like, thinking of Hero Forge. Just, like, chest.
It couldn't be contained.
Holy shit.
Yeah, my heart couldn't contain it, so it just had, like...
Three sizes too small.
Exactly. Sorry, it was just mentioning Hero Forge. It made my chest expand rapidly.
If Saber Forge would please sponsor us as well.
There's a lot of things that we want, but that's neither here nor there.
So, Goblin?
Wait, do we got everybody's final thoughts wrapped
up? No, I still gotta do mine.
Well, do yours.
Final thoughts. Don't be afraid to experiment with genres and with the players that you play them with. Because I can play, you know, I've mentioned Deep Rock Galactic before. I can play Deep Rock Galactic with a couple of friends. They're really into it. They're just kind of in it for the corny dwarf jokes in their various forms and just, you know, a little bit of the first-person shooter horror riot shooting. And I can play that same game with a different group of people, and all of a sudden we're like this tactical squad, full deep immersion RP. You know, it's like, I'm the digger, I like to burn things, dig things, and that's it. Right? Or, you know, this, that, and the other thing. So it feels very different playing a game with certain groups as playing that same game with other people. And that can affect how you approach the genres too. So don't be afraid to try things several times. And as for miniatures, I like both having miniatures and I like Theater of the Mind if it's done right. Goblin was very good at Theater of the Mind, so like us playing Vampire,
yeah, it was
a full experience, even though we never ever had minis for that game at all.
Didn't need them. If I say you guys are on a freeway, you know you guys are on a freeway. You can visualize that.
Exactly.
How many lanes?
Yeah.
Which direction?
Four northbound, three southbound.
See? And all of a sudden, we now have this picture of this weird seven-lane highway. But...
Well, one's for HOV.
You know what? That makes sense.
Each lane alternates.
Merging sucks.
That the center lane you just alternates between north and southbound at random intervals.
Just like a turn lane in an 8-lane freeway.
It's the world of darkness. It was Pentex that made it.
Minis are fun, but they also encourage a very tactical sort of mindset in gaming. And if the game that you're playing does not really have that in mind, your GM better be damn good at improv and figuring out rules on the fly. Or you're going to run into problems that are really weird to deal with if you do it that way.
All right, to gaming and psychology, like you guys said, there's a lot of flavors out there for everybody. And I hate to say from personal experience, but from personal experience...
Dun, dun,
dun! Dun, dun, da! I burned out on shooters, but I found by experimentation that I really like survival games. It's going to fill that void. So over time, you might find your there's a change in what you like or dislike. And even if it's something that you don't really click with right off the bat, if you see it on sale, pick it up. You might be surprised.
Yeah, sales are a wonderful thing.
Sales are a wonderful thing. And if everybody else seems to be playing a game that's popular and you're like, I don't see why it's popular, well, just pick
try
it up.
It.
Yeah, pick it up on a discount, try it. And if you don't like it,
borrow it from your buddy.
You're only out $10.
Or less.
But I spent some money on ARK Survival Evolved, and I found that I really like survival games, and my library of those has grown exponentially over the last few years.
Goblin, just given your chaotic evil mindset, I really want to encourage you to play Space Station 13 if you haven't already.
Well, I'm downloading one right now, actually, while we're recording, and I plan on going in later and making my meat throne, because apparently you can enslave and capture and kill all the NPCs in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm planning on making the Empire of Awesome, where I'm the only one with green skin ruling over all the pink skins.
Yep, that sounds like you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
My all throne right. of meat! And on minis... The only thing I have to say, because most people who play with minis already gone through kind of like the basic precursor stuff, you know, that they've look up painting guides. There's plenty of those online or at your local gaming stores. There's all these people there who have experience with miniatures. The only thing I have to say about that is if you hire someone to paint your mini for you.
Like me.
Or me.
Make sure that they have a catalog of minis that they can show you beforehand. Because I've had to redo somebody's mini. It took me 13 hours. I had to peel all the paint off and just start from scratch. And they already paid somebody else. Like $20 to paint their mini. And it looked like a fiver job. It was just... The character came out looking like a turd with a sword. And, you know, the customer was, like, totally unhappy with it. I'm like... And this was back when I was running the shop. So I was, like, kind of being the face of the shop. And I said, look, I'll repaint it for you, no charge. You know, just something to do when I'm at home.
Yeah.
I repainted it, gave it to him. He tipped me, you know, like, I think it was a hamburger and some fries. Because I told him, you know, I'm not charging you any money for this. You already paid somebody. It's wrong to pay $50 to get your mini done twice. So the only thing I can say is if you pay somebody, make sure you see a catalog. Like you would check out a real artist. If you're going to have a real artist make you like a web page background or some shit.
Yeah.
Check their portfolio first. If some dude says, oh, I can paint minis.
Let's see your work then.
Let's see your work then.
That's the only reason I have an Instagram. I just use it to showcase my shit.
Yeah, I've seen it happen
more than once. And that's a valid option.
Yeah.
That's a perfectly valid option.
I kind of want to get one of those light boxes that I can put, you know, little background things in, and then just do all my minis and just make a portfolio.
There you go.
That'd be great. That's the only thing I can add to minis, because anything else you need to know is already out there. You want to know how to paint minis? Games Workshop has a great catalog on tutorials. YouTube has a great catalog on tutorials. D&D Minis and Dungeon Magazine have great tutorials, so there's nothing I can add to that that they haven't already done.
Or you can do like I did. Get a bunch of minis on the cheap and just trial and error. Find your style.
Yeah,
that's how I started. Actually, you know, if you're interested in starting painting your own minis, start with the cheap and easy ones. I started with Space Marines. Those are pretty much the easiest things to paint other than a slat of wood.
Or you can totally do one of the things I tried to do. Get one of those board games with a bunch of minis, the Magic the Gathering ones, or hell, go buy a bunch of toy soldiers from the dollar store.
Dungeon Explorer. Dungeon
Explorer
is a really good set for that.
And you just get a bunch of minis and get paints. You know, paint is expensive, but get the paint you want to use for all your stuff, and then just find your style.
Or you can go and buy some Funko Pop figures and paint over those, because the paint jobs on those things is shit anyways.
Yeah, I don't like buying trash.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
If you're gonna do it, make a project of it.
Yeah, the amount of people, because they released some 40K pop figures, and the amount of professional painters who said, all right, I'm going to do this right, and then posted it, it's a big number. Yeah, it makes me very happy, and the paint jobs are like, holy shit, how come it didn't come in the box like this?
Because it's made on the cheap.
Exactly.
All right, we've hit our time, we've had our final thoughts.
Yep.
Anything final? One?
Game Goblin. Signing off. See you next week.
The moniker, signing off by...
What, you're not going to do your orc voice?
I can't think of anything good to say.
Kazakan, back to these guys.
Darth Blasphemous, I shall return. Do not disappoint me again.
No promises! Thin your paints, otherwise you have cognitive dissonance.
Come on. Heavy.